Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. Today, a reading from Free Grace Broadcaster. And this entire publication is this time is given over to A Husband's Love. We're studying the words of Matthew Henry and David Martin Lloyd-Jones. And today, Ezekiel Hopkins. And there'll be Charles Spurgeon and George Swinock, some others coming up. Some names you recognize, some you don't. I encourage you to write to chapel@mountzion.org or www.chapellibrary.org and contact these people and ask them to send you what I am reading from. You'll get a quarterly publication and other things that they will send to you absolutely free. You can send them offerings if you like. Today, The Responsibilities of Love by Ezekiel Hopkins, an Anglican minister who lived from 1634 to 1690. He says the duties of married persons are either special or common. Special are those which are the duties only of one party to the other, either of the husband to the wife or the wife to the husband. Common are those which belong to both and are to be mutually performed by both. I shall first begin with those duties that belong to a husband toward his wife. And they are these. First, conjugal love, that is, marital love. Indeed, love is a beautiful ornament to all relations. But it is the foundation and first principle of this. It is love that ought at first to tie the marriage knot. And it is love alone that can afterwards make it easy. No other respect whatsoever can keep it from wringing and galling us. And although lack of love cannot dissolve the bond, yet it doth dissolve the joy and comfort of a married state. Now, of all the objects that are allowed us to love here on earth, a wife is the chiefest. Yea, to be loved above parents, children, friends, and the dearest of all other relations. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, Genesis 2:24. And if you would know the full measure of this love, the apostle hath prescribed it. He says, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies, Ephesians 5:28. And let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, Ephesians 5:33. You must be as careful and tender of their good as of your own, and resent any injury done unto them as much as if it were done unto yourselves. And indeed there is great reason for it. For marriage makes of two one flesh. It doth not compensate our damage and restore the rib to our side again. And therefore by marriage two are said to be made one flesh. And they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain but one flesh. Mark 10:8. Therefore, all violence and outrage against a wife, into which the rude and boisterous fury of some brutish men doth too often break, is as unnatural as if you should see a man beat, wound, and gash himself. And certainly they are mad and distracted passions, which take revenge upon themselves. No man ever yet hated his own flesh, that is, no man actually acting rationally, and as becomes a man, but loveth and cherisheth it, Ephesians 5:29. So that we are to love our wives with the same tenderness and naturalness of affection as our own beings. They should be as dear to us as ourselves. And if you would have this high affection mounted a degree higher, and see verse 25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. If a natural affection will not suffice, behold here a supernatural one. The greatest instance of love that ever was expressed or conceived brought to be the rule and pattern of ours. Christ loved the church, his spouse, although there were many spots, blemishes, and imperfections in her. He loved her so as to leave his father and cleave to his wife. He loved her better than himself in his own life, and shed his most precious blood for her. And rather than the wrath of God should fall upon his beloved spouse, he thrusts himself between and receives those heavy blows on his own person. So ought men also to love their wives. So infinitely, if it were possible, but because it is not so, then sincerely. And therefore, first, they must love them, though they often betray many weaknesses and imperfections. These they ought meekly to bear with, though they must not countenance nor encourage them. Love will cover a multitude of faults, and so long as they are but faults and not crimes, we ought no more to divorce our affections than our persons from them. There is indeed a touchy love that is oversensitive and easily offended, which will cause great wrath for very small offenses. But usually such kind of love turns into bitterness and exasperation. Therefore, offenses of this nature should be prudently passed by, only with a glancing reproof, or with a silence that shall be more instructive than noise and clamor. Here the apostle exhorts husbands, "Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them," Colossians 3:19. Secondly, we should so love them as not to upbraid them with the necessities or encumbrances of a married life, but we should be content to diminish our former freedom and to forego our former privileges, either of plenty or pleasure, which we enjoyed in a single condition, without reproaching them with it. Many fools there are who fancy nothing but joys and delights in a married life, but when they enter it and find many unexpected troubles, and that they cannot live either at so much ease or with so much splendor as before, they think to right themselves by perpetual brawls with their wives, imputing the cause to them and charging on them all the burdens and inconveniences under which they both labor. And of these, the woman commonly hath the greater share. Now, this is not to love as Christ loved the church, who, for her sake, stripped himself of his glory, voluntarily humbled himself, first to the dust, and then to the death, the cruel and cursed death of the cross. Thirdly, we ought so to love them as to interpose and step in between them and danger, and rather suffer it to fall upon ourselves than upon them. For so Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, redeeming it from the wrath of God by his own undergoing it, and delivering it from death by suffering death for it. Fourthly, we ought to love them so much as to endeavor to promote the spiritual good of their souls, and by good counsels and instructions, insinuate into them the love of piety and holiness. We should do this so that as Christ sanctifieth the church, his spouse, we may also sanctify ours and present them unto God without spot or wrinkle or any such thing. In these four things, we are to love our wives even as Christ loved his church, by bearing with and pardoning their weaknesses, by being willing to submit to many inconveniences for their sakes, by interposing ourselves between them and danger, and lastly, by endeavoring to promote their spiritual good and benefit. And so much for the first duty, which is love. Now, on it I have insisted longer because it comprehends all the other duties. For where there is this sincere and conjugal affection, although it may have different methods of expressing itself according to the different tempers of men, yet it will certainly, in this as in all other cases, command the whole train and retinue of other affections to wait upon it, and to see that nothing be lacking to the good of the object on which it is fixed. I shall therefore be the briefer in the rest. Secondly, another duty of the husband beyond love is provident care for his wife. He ought, saith the apostle, to nourish and cherish her, as Christ doth the church, Ephesians 5:29. He must therefore impart unto her, according to his rank and ability, whatsoever may be for her necessity or comfort. He must not waste in riot and excess among his lewd and wicked companions, companions that the devil hath given him, that which ought to be for her support, whom God hath given him for his companion, and who meanwhile hath nothing to feed on but her sorrows, nothing to drink but her tears. Another duty that husbands owe their wives is protection from dangers when they are in jeopardy. Indeed, the weakness and feebleness of that gender, being more helpless in dangers than ours and less able to raise themselves out of trouble, calls for this ready aid and help from us. He who is so churlish as not to afford it is so unnatural as to suffer a part of himself to perish. In Scripture, a wife is compared to a fruitful vine, Psalm 128:3. Now, a vine is a weak, tender plant and requires support. And the husband should be as the house side for her stay and support. Therefore, woman was at first made of a rib, taken from under the man's arm. And the office of the arm is to repel and keep off injuries, which signifies unto us that the husband ought to defend his wife from all wrongs and injuries that she may be exposed to. Another duty is instruction and direction. Therefore, the husband is called her head, the seat and fountain of knowledge and wisdom. The husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, Ephesians 5:23. Therefore, as all direction and consolation is derived from Christ, so should the husband likewise hand down and communicate knowledge, comfort, and guidance to the wife. Called, therefore, her guide, Proverbs 2:17. And Peter requires of husbands that they should dwell with their wives according to knowledge, to be able to advise and inform them in all emergent cases, especially concerning God and their souls. Whence, Paul enjoins wives that if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, 1 Corinthians 14:35. Therefore, much more is it required of husbands that they should have laid up a good stock of knowledge and be able to teach them, lest such as creep into houses and lead captive silly women ensnare their wives, 2 Timothy 3:6. For such is the subtlety of deceivers, following therein the method of the old serpent. They first begin with the woman and then make use of her to seduce the man. For heresy, as all other sins, does first inveigle the affections, and then by them corrupts the reason. Therefore the husband should be well grounded and principled with knowledge, that he may keep his wife from being led away by the crafty subtlety of those who lie in wait to deceive, those who by good words and fair speeches, affected phrases and jingling expressions that have nothing in them but sound and error, pervert the hearts of the simple. But if, as it sometimes happens, God hath endowed the wife with a greater measure of prudence and solid, substantial knowledge than the husband, it is then his part to hearken to her advice and to yield not indeed to the authority of the counselor, his wife, as she is bound to do, but to the authority of the counsel, that is, the Scriptures. This she ought to offer him with all respect and submission, not having power to enjoin what she knows to be best and fittest, but only with modesty propounding it, and with meekness persuading him to embrace it. Another duty of the husband is tenderness and mildness towards his wife, not causelessly grieving her either by speeches or actions. That is a wretched family where those who are joined in the same yoke spurn and kick at one another. If the wife be careful in performing her duty, there belongs to her a kind and loving acceptation of it, and praise and commendation for it. If she sometimes should fail, she ought not to be rebuked with bitterness, but with meekness, and in such a way as the reproof should show more sorrow than anger. but perpetual brawling and contention, besides that they wholly embitter this state of life and eat out all the comfort of it instead of preventing offenses for the future, do usually provoke and exasperate to more. They are perhaps a greater fault in the husband than that which he exclaims at in his wife. Besides, it will certainly indispose them both to the performance of those duties that belong unto them in their general and particular callings as husband and wife. It will hinder their prayers, for how can they lift up their hands without wrath, as the apostle commands in 1 Timothy 2:8, if they burn in anger one against the other? How can they pray to God for blessings upon each other when they've been cursing and reviling each other? And as for the duties of their particular callings, do we not see that in those families where this baneful contention reigns, they are commonly neglected? All runs to wreck and ruin out of a kind of revenge that one party thinks to take upon the other. The husband, out of discontent, will not provide, nor the wife manage. And so nothing is cared for, but only how they may quarrel and rail at each other. A misery that many families fall into through the indiscreet heats and fierceness of the man upon every trivial offense of the wife. Another duty of the husband is to give due respect and honor unto his wife. Give honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, 1 Peter 3:7. For being weak, she ought to be treated with the more respect and gentleness. Think honorably of her as the person whom God saw best and fittest for you in all the world. And be not tempted, so much as in a thought, to believe that any other could have been either so proper or so beneficial unto you. Speak honorably of her, not divulging any of her failings and imperfections to her discredit, but giving her the due praise of those virtues and graces that are in her. For he that disgraceth his wife disparageth himself, and everyone will censure him as guilty of folly, either in choosing or in governing her. Treat her honorably, neither making thyself a servant to her, her moods, for that will dishonor thee, nor making her a slave to thine, for that is to dishonor her. But treat her as thy bosom friend, thy endeared companion, and in everything but authority, equal to thyself. And the last duty of a husband is prudent maintaining and managing of his authority. His authority over his wife is God's, who hath entrusted him with it. Our Savior illustrates his own authority over the church by the authority of a husband over his wife, Ephesians 5. And therefore it is not basely to be betrayed, nor to be maintained with rigor and a tyrannical violence. But the right and most effectual way of keeping up this authority is by prudence and gravity, by self-control and godliness, and a dignified, exemplary, and disciplined life. This will cause a reverent esteem and veneration in the wife and in the whole family, whereas lightness at one time and severity at another will but expose us to contempt for the one and hatred for the other. It is hard for him to be respected by others who doth not first respect himself. For he that will prostitute himself by foolish and ridiculous moods, or by vile and wicked actions, injustice, intemperance, lying, etc., must fall under the scorn of his nearest relations. But an excellent mixture of prudence and godliness together, the one to be a guide and the other to be an example, will make a man truly awe-inspiring, worthy of profound respect, and will induce the wife and the whole family to esteem and to imitate him so much for the duties of the husband towards the wife. Now that's from a book or a chapter from an exposition of the Ten Commandments, an exposition of the Ten Commandments in The Works of Ezekiel Hopkins, Volume 1. You might want to look that one up too. And so you thought Calvinism and Puritanism and all those old folks, they just talked about predestination. That's all they talked about, right? No, they had a full, balanced Christian life based on the scriptures. And this is part of it, and an important part of it. And I hope it's blessing you as it is challenging me. God bless you today. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. The Hackberry House of Chosun. Talk to you, Lord willing, very soon. Bye-bye.